is KJ and Lyons. KJ Carson and John Lyons right now on WEEI.
Well, hello and welcome to another edition of KJ and Lyons on WEEI. 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. John, that's Gerard Mayo on the Greg Hill Show earlier this week. He's going to do what's best for the team. Him and Elliot Wolf are in this together. I ask you, does it feel like Gerard Mayo has calmed this situation down with the Patriots?
It was definitely a step in the right direction, right? And reminds me of week one. Remember there were questions in training camp about, hey, how's this going to go? And he's a first-year head coach. And you had the Judon situation, the Drake May. He's better, but he's not starting, but he's playing better.
The practice situation you observed.
Yeah, that too. And then they come out in week one and they win. And I feel like a lot of people were excited they won, obviously. But also it was kind of like, okay, maybe they are on to something here. But then you lose six in a row. And not only do you lose six in a row, you look flat out bad in the last few of them. Really, more than the last few, but especially. So then to bounce back and to get this win, especially the way they won it. I mean, KJ, they hadn't won a game that they were trailing by six or more at halftime since 2021 when they beat Houston with Mac Jones. And this is the first time since 2017.
That was a fourth quarter win. That's right.
And this is the first time since 2017 that they were trailing in the final minute and ended up winning.
Well, yeah, so. Because this team doesn't, you would not think this is, unless you're thinking like maybe there's a special thing that can happen, like in that Jets game where it was like the most boring game you ever saw until Jonathan Jones runs back the kick. That's probably
Marcus
the only other
Jones,
one.
But yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yes,
right,
yes.
Right.
That was the most boring game ever.
Right, it was the most boring game I've ever seen. Colts game was right after that. But and this goes to the tenet of managing expectations, right? We talk about this is supposed to be a new regime, but at the same time, there are going to be some things from Belichick. You just can't ignore the previous 22 years, throw it out the window and say, forget all of that. But I've always been under the guise of the biggest story with this team is going to be managing the expectations and then going and doing your job, right? Because if the fans are more tied to the expectations, right? Remember, as the season started, I said weeks 2 through 7 are going to be tough. And they were. So I expected it to be a rough roll. I didn't expect the Jacksonville loss, and I think that's probably a few of us. But at the same time, I would say that this team is moving in the right direction as we're seeing other teams move in the wrong direction that are much more talented, that have much greater expectations, that have guys that are making a considerable amount more to do their job. So I like, as you said, I like the direction that this is moving because it felt like the ship be sinking before this week.
Yeah, it really did. And let's be fair, too. A big part of this win is how bad and dysfunctional the Jets are, too, right? Like, that helped. But I think if you look at the Patriots, like, the Jaguars were really dysfunctional, and they beat the Patriots by 16 points, right? So the Jets were the similar team. They still had Robert Saleh in week 3, and they dominated the Patriots. So for the Patriots to take an opponent that's bad, that's dysfunctional, and win that game, well, that's a good step, right? That's what, as you build long-term and you try to be a good team, those are the types of games you should win. Like week 1, Cincinnati's good now, or better now, I should say, but they were pretty dysfunctional in week 1, and there was uncertainties. Was Jamar Chase playing? Is T.
That's
Higgins
right.
playing? What's the contract situation? They always start slow. So you beat that team. That's good. And then you do it again to the Jets on Sunday. So again, I don't want to make a mountain out of this win because you're still 2-6. The Jets are like really dysfunctional. But I think it is a good step in the direction that you want to go because eventually if you're going to be a good team, these are the types of wins you stack together. Right? When the other team is more dysfunctional than you or the other team is in a bad place, you beat them. And that's what they did to the Jets on Sunday.
617-779-7937. Text line 37937. KJ and Lyons on WEEI. Coming up, Just the Jag in about 30 minutes. We're talking Patriots. And I guess the other part I did want to get to about this is, so maybe the comments about telling the team that they're playing soft worked, right? Because it would be a bad situation if you said that after last week, and then you get let's just call it what you got the result, everything leading up until the 59th minute of this game. But you almost feel like had they lost again in a situation where the Jets just seem to keep giving you the game, I think maybe Kraft has to start saying, maybe my plan for Gerard Mayo doesn't go as long as I believe. But I think getting this team to 2-6 now is one of those situations where you have to say, is this the worst two-win team in the league based on all the situations around the league? And I would say no. And so therefore, that's where it sounds crazy, but that's where the growth opportunity is that you're not there. There's a hand. I mean, what, there's like six or seven two-win teams in the league? And you would have to say the Patriots might be the second best in terms of looking forward of what they have versus, because the Dolphins, I think that's one thing, but the other teams that have two wins, there's such a level of dysfunctionality that it's greater than the Patriots, which is really just kind of a growing pains, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, look, from a big picture perspective, saying we're not the worst kind of makes me sick, but you're correct, right? Like, of the two-win teams, you look at the setup for the future, some are set up better than the Patriots, but some are in a worse spot. I mean, if like, look at the Jets right now. Would you rather be the Jets or the Patriots right now? I mean, Jets are all in, right? You have Rodgers, you have all these big contracts, but you fire the coach, you're still 2-6. Like, that's an organization that's in a really, really bad spot, right? Patriots, I would argue, for the next setup over the next 3-4 years, are probably in a better spot than where the Jets are at. Not that they're more talented right now, but just the Jets went all in and they're still 2-6, right? Like, that's pretty bad. And if you look at like where this Patriots team is at, again, like, you're 2-6, that's bad. But do you have things you can start to build on? Like, Drake May leaves the game, but prior to that, I thought he was playing really well. I mean, right. He made a great pass down the sideline to Tyquan Thornton that was dropped. He had a great...
Using his legs when needed to.
Yeah, the rushing touchdown. You read my mind there. Yeah, so, like, I thought he was playing really well. Your young defense still was frustrated, right? You didn't get a stop late when you needed to again. But on that very last possession, I mean, look at what happened with the Bears. They gave up a Hail Mary touchdown. At least you didn't do that, I guess, right?
Well, one guy gave it
up.
Yeah,
no kidding, right? Yeah, so, I mean... Are there little things to build on as you look forward to the future? I think, you know, maybe that there are there, but there's still, again, I'm not trying to poo-poo it, but it's 2-6. You still have a lot of questions, but my takeaway, my biggest takeaway, it is at least a step in the direction you want to go.
Well, let me give you scenarios, and this is why I think the Patriots don't look bad in the group that they're in. 1-2 win teams, Panthers, Saints, Giants, Titans, Jags, Browns, Raiders, Jets, Dolphins, Patriots. Out of all those teams, I think probably the only one you would tell me that has any type of upside with only 1 or 2 wins would be the Dolphins in that group outside of the Patriots, right? Because the Panthers,
I would add the Saints, too, because like their quarterback's hurt, so when he comes back, like, I think they'll be better.
I just don't know how they fell so bad. Again, if they keep Kamara, I think that's another thing. But the Giants are a mess. We'll see what's up with the Titans this weekend. The Jags, maybe there's a recovery there.
Yeah,
maybe
I'd put them quarterback.
Right. Maybe they've kind of recovered some things. The Browns would be an interesting watch now with Jameis Winston in there. But the Raiders, and you just mentioned the Jets, like the Jets could be they could have the two most embarrassing showings in 1 week, right? That's how bad the Jets situation is. So if I'm the Patriots, or if I'm a Patriots fan more so, I would say, you know what? At least you have a quarterback of the future. The head coach is new. The GM, or whatever you want to call him, he's new. And then there's still going to be some clearing out. Right? Josh Uche, you send him off. And some people are like, that's all you got was 4-6. But you would have to ask yourself, what else were you going to get for him?
Yeah, and like the Uche thing, yeah, I would have loved more than a sixth-round pick next year. Or
who would
really
give
2 years. But if you look at what Uche's done, he had a 10-sack season a couple years ago next to Matt Judon. Last year, he had some really good moments and some good games, but he wasn't super consistent. He's not a three-down player, right? Not a big run game player. And this year, and whether you agree with or disagree with the coaching staff on this, they didn't use him nearly as much as he's been used in the past. So we're talking about a guy that is talented. I think he's going to play really well in Kansas City, partly because he's got Chris Jones there on the defensive line with him, right? But given the way he was being used this year, I'm not surprised it was a sixth-round pick. Now, I wish it had been in this coming draft, not 2 years from now, but I think a sixth-round pick for a guy that hasn't been used that much and hasn't put up flashy numbers outside of when he was next to Matt Judon, I mean, it makes sense.
So doesn't that tell you what they kind of thought of the player? If they thought, like, hey, we'll take a sixth-rounder next year. Not next year, but the year after. So I think part of it is, I've talked about this here, is at some point, and this is what I respect about what's going on with Mayo right now, is that if you have to slowly bleed some of the culture that you may feel doesn't fit and these people aren't getting it done on the field for you, piece by piece, you can let them go. Because I would argue maybe 4 guys on the roster will get you anything fourth round or somewhere fourth round or higher, right? And these are guys you would probably say they're just untouchable and they haven't shown to be a problem. Maybe Stevenson a little bit. You're trying to figure that out. But everybody else, I think, is pretty much is available for sale. I mean, I hate to use that term, but if you're a two-win team, what's really telling you that, hey, if it would be a thing, John, if you had injuries to major star players, if there were three or four star players that were injured and guys were trying to fill in their roles, that's something different. But this is their roles. You went and got KJ Osborne. You're still trying to figure out what you can get out of Kendrick Bourne. You've got rookies in here. You've got second-year guys. You've got a couple of guys who are sixth-rounders who are producing not too badly. So anybody can kind of go. And if that has to start happening now, the trade deadline next week. But if this is the slow trickle, say, yeah, we're going to go and we're not going to really get a whole back from you, then I think it's kind of a signal of what they really thought of the player inside of this current culture.
Yeah, well, and I also think with the Uche thing specifically, it was a lot to do with the contract, right? He took a one-year deal for less money. It was very unlikely the guy was going to re-sign here next year because, as I said, they were using him a little bit less. Also, this looks like it might be a two- or three-year build. Maybe he doesn't want to wait for that. So if you know you're going to lose the guy no matter what, and you and I think a lot of people believe, they're going to spend a decent amount of money next offseason, which means you probably wouldn't get a comp pick for him, so you'd really lose him for nothing,
right?
While you can get something for him. And let's be honest with ourselves, if Josh Uche is here the rest of the year, I mean, and I'm not trying to be rude here to him.
Be honest.
Does it add one win, maybe? Like really, does it make it? Because just his role and his usage, it's not like they're trading away a guy who's going to single-handedly win them, you know, two or three games, or, you know, one game and then play a major part in another win. Like, maybe he makes one key play and you maybe get one more win. So I think you take that all in the context together, it's not surprising to me why they were willing to deal him.
KJ and Lyons, WEEI, 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. Join the conversation. Does it feel like Jerod Mayo's turning it around? Are you not a believer? No wrong answer, but join the conversation. Right now, it's time to trend with Zach Coe.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Bruins are back in action tonight, welcoming the Philadelphia Flyers to the Garden. No Jeremy Swayman in net for the Bees tonight. It'll be Juuna Korpisalo. Puck drop from over on Causeway Street, set for 7 p.m. Celtics have the night off tonight after beating the Milwaukee Bucks 119-108. They'll head to Indianapolis tomorrow for a playoff rematch with the Pacers. Patriots have the day off today. They'll return to practice tomorrow ahead of Sunday's matchup in Nashville with the Titans. No injury report has been released yet, so rookie quarterback Drake May's status is still unknown. Major news in the NFL world today. The Indianapolis Colts are benching their 2023 first-round pick Anthony Richardson in favor of veteran Joe Flacco. The Ravens acquired wide receiver Deontay Johnson and a sixth-round pick from the Carolina Panthers in exchange for a fifth. Finally, the Texans wide receiver Stephon Diggs tore his ACL, the team announced. His season is over. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More KJ and Lyons coming up after this.
This is not a real election ad.
KJ and Lyons bring forth a new nation in sports talk entertainment. A show that believes in appealing to the super smart down to the guy who still acts like a 10th grader.
I'm letting you know that I'm a damn werewolf.
The show that can tie everyday life and Boston sports like no other.
It's high-end stuff, KJ.
This election season, vote KJ and Lyons. A show for the people. By the people.
Yes, KJ and Lyons can.
KJ and Lyons are doing a heck of a job.
And yes, KJ and Lyons are bigly on sports.
Read my lips.
KJ and Lyons are the bee's knees.
Because it is you that KJ and Lyons work for.
I could care less about some kid in college right now.
You better care about him, KJ.
No, here's the thing.
Vote KJ and Lyons. A show for you, the people.
I'm KJ and I overdraft my account to pay for this ad.
This is not a real election ad.
We're back to KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons, WEEI. 617-779-7937, text line 37937, still to come, Justin Jag in 20 minutes. And then, John, I cannot wait for when we have some of the Boston sports personalities stop by KJ and Lyons for their Halloween candy. It's going to be a lot of fun. The candy we're going to hand out to some of these people, they may throw it back in our face.
We've been planning this for like 2 weeks, too. I think it's refined pretty well. I think we got some good ones.
But that is a good show, right? Because most people just buy candy last minute. You know, you end up in there. They got like Mary Jane's that are like half wrapped.
I haven't bought mine yet.
these, there you go, right? And it's not going to get any cheaper. You know, now, you know, part of the secret really is going the day after and those super bags that they put out that go for like 20, and they're like 80% off. Like, that is like almost like Christmas in October. A little bit. Dentists hate it.
Yeah. Day after Easter, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Easter candy, that's like, I don't like Peeps. So you could discount Peeps 105% and I'm still not going to buy them. In fact, you give me change if I took them for free. And, of course, John's favorite, Just a Jag in 20 minutes. Like, you could have gone as Just a Jag at a Halloween party this week.
I actually kind of did.
But here's the thing. Nobody would have gotten it because it's such a new feature on the show. Unless you're like, oh, my God. Your wife would be like, oh, my God, that's kind of clever. You just wore a Jag. Like, you know how you generic team jerseys that doesn't have a name? It just, you know, it's just doesn't really have a name. You could have gone as Just a Jag. And that would have been so clever. Maybe next year when the bit takes.
And I'll have
more.
A boombox with the Just a Jag theme song playing on.
There you go. They'll be like,
shoulder.
And you know what I would say to you? No doubt. Okay, that was bad humor. Bad humor right there. You just heard Gerard Mayo saying, "Look, everything goes through the quarterback. That's nothing new in the NFL." But he did say something a bit off to me, I thought, which was saying that Drake needs to do a better job of protecting himself.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and I thought the hit that he got injured on was more a hit that probably should have been flagged, right? He got hit in the head after he slid. But I think it's something Drake May needs to be cognizant of. I mean, you look at what he played, one series or a series and a half, and he had 3-4 scrambles, some long runs. And those are exciting things, and they're good. Like the one
he's got that offensive line, though.
Right. The one that stood out to me, so we all remember the touchdown run, too. That was great. But 2nd and 7, midway through the first quarter at the Jets 40, and he scrambles for 11 yards, gets a first down. Now you're deeper in Jets territory, and he gets the touchdown a few plays later.
Right.
Like, those are the types of plays, to me, KJ, that Drake May should do with his leg. Like, not all the time, but every now and then, hey, you have a running lane, which we know the Jets gave him a bunch of early in that game.
Right.
You have a lane to pick up a first down on a 2nd and long or a 3rd and long. No one's open. Take it. I don't want Drake May running all the time like Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. And I don't think they're going to use him that way.
Right.
But I think that's where it can get a little dangerous just because kind of the natural law of the universe, right? Like the more times you do something, the higher
the
chance.
You're more likely to get
hurt. Right. So like once in a while, like if he did like that 2nd and 7 play I just mentioned, if he did that 3 or 4 times a game, great. Do I want him doing it 3 times a series like he did on that touchdown drive? Not real. Once in a while, but not really all the time though.
Well, I think with Drake May, I think there's kind of an area where you would say, okay, we really want you to use that. It's probably around your own 40, right? If you've gotten a couple of successful, you've got maybe a couple of successful first downs, then you say, okay, this could be the difference of us getting closer to field goal range and getting points on the board versus constantly doing this if you're at your 25 or 30 or something like that. You're like, you're absolutely right. I don't want it to be 1st and 10, and the first thing you're thinking from the 30 is I'm going to take off running. Now, if it's 3rd and 7 and we're at the opponent's 48, now you're saying, okay, if we take this with our legs, now we have a chance to put ourselves in scoring position versus, you know, an incomplete pass. We're out of field goal range. We're out of the point range. I guess the other part is at some point you have to let Drake May be a little bit structural reckless. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think the two guys that I would want him to try to emulate in that regard are Mahomes especially, but also Joe Burrow. And those are guys that we don't look at them as running quarterbacks, but they're quarterbacks that can run. And I think that's an important distinction because those guys will play within the offense. They're primarily passers, but every now and then there'll be a 3rd and 6 or a 2nd and 11. No one will get open, and the defense will be a little bit asleep, and all of a sudden, boom, they pick up a big first down, and it kind of changes the momentum either of the game or at least that point in the game. And I think that's what he should try to emulate. Like I mentioned, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson earlier, I don't want him doing that because, look, Lamar Jackson's a unique athlete, maybe in NFL history for the quarterback position, so he can get away with doing things other guys can't. And Josh Allen, I think, is built bigger than an 18-wheeler, so he can also take more punishment. But even those guys sometimes, I think, take more punishment than I would like to see if I were a fan of those teams. So I'd rather him emulate the Burrow-Mahomes style where, yeah, you can run, but you do it at strategic points.
Yeah, I guess, but the running quarterback is starting to get a bit blurred. Even Lamar Jackson is trying to throw more.
And he's a great passer, by
right,
the way.
Right, 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 exactly. Yeah, Josh Allen, the same thing, right? I think, look, I think when we think of running quarterbacks are the guy who can take off, and it's going to be very hard for that second line of defense to be able to catch him from behind, right? It's really, can they get past that second line, those linebackers, yeah, and then those linebackers can't catch up with him. I think that's what we think of more of a running quarterback. Like, right now, probably the running quarterback that jumps out of my mind more than anybody else would be Jalen Hurts, right? Because everything he really depends on comes down to is a run of his own. Where with Burrow's got the arm, Allen's got the arm, Lamar Jackson's got the arm, Mahomes has got the arm, right? Mahomes likes chaos. I don't know if I would want Drake May to be able to be in this chaos situation just because I think it's easier for Mahomes when you've got Andy Reid as your architect and you know where you want to go with the different chaotic moments where you're still trying to figure it out here. So there's a part of me that say, let Drake May kind of develop who Drake May is going to be, because he could end up being kind of his own original versus trying to say you should be this guy, you should be that guy, just because the tools that he has right now. Look, think about it. How big, if he doesn't make those runs on those series and he doesn't score the touchdown, what happens the rest of the game? You probably end up with a very stagnant offense. In fact, that's really kind of what you got until that last drive. So had Drake May not done the Drake May thing, this is another loss for the Patriots.
Well, and I think what Mayo's talking about, though, is if he doesn't run like that, maybe he doesn't get hurt, doesn't come out, and the game goes differently, too. And I think you got to find that balance, because one of the appealing things about Drake May, and I would also add about Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams in the draft, was that, hey, these guys can pick up key first downs with their legs. And, of course, Daniels was more of a runner than May. But right, that was part of the appeal, right? Like, hey, this is a guy that can do things a little bit differently. And you mentioned the name Jalen Hurts. And look, I know a couple of years ago they're in the Super Bowl. Jalen Hurts had an MVP year. I don't want Drake May to be like Jalen Hurts.
Right,
though.
That's a running quarterback.
Like, yeah, I don't want that where they do a bunch of – and even, you know, compare it to like when Cam Newton was here or even early in Josh Allen's career, where it's like they're doing read option and they're, you know –
Cam Newton's whole career for
this
part.
Yeah, it's built around like, hey, this guy is a runner who, yeah, we'll use to throw when he's got an arm, but this guy's a runner and that's exciting. I don't want that. I want the guy that, hey, this guy's a great quarterback, a great passer, but he can also run and pick up key first downs. And again, I think that's an important distinction, I think, for Drake May's long-term health, because this is another piece that you and I talked about in training camp when it was coming down to the, hey, do you start him or not discussion. May still, for NFL standards, needs to get a little bit bigger, right? And he needs to be able to take a little bit more punishment. And look, he's a rookie, so I don't expect him to be huge by NFL standards. But
yeah, he can't be on the Balco program in the NFL.
Right, not yet, right? So as a rookie, it's going to take him time to build up some more strength, to build up some more muscle, to be able to take a little bit more punishment. So I think even more so early in your career with a guy like that, you want to be a little bit more careful.
Well, it does feel like the offensive line is getting a little bit better. I'm not going to sit here and say that it's great, but it seems like it's now at the bend, don't break situation. I think that's where kind of the defense is at some points as well. But they're at a bend-don't-break situation, and I think it's really key for May to be able to come out of the concussion protocol and be able to play this week, because he is their forward momentum and their energy. Look, Jacoby Brissett had a great drive towards the end. At the end of the game, it was just like all of the stars aligned of so many things that weren't happening before, receivers dropping passes that they should have had. Just a really ugly game, and it suddenly came forth. But you feel like Drake May is the one that's going to allow the receivers to feel like, okay, I know I can't perform the way I did last week, because if this guy's coming back and the way he's been feeding the ball, it's now clear, because I think all the eyes now have gone away. I think they've kind of gone away from the offensive line and are now really solely on this wide receiver room. Kind of like, are any of these guys really high? Could you say these guys could have a next level in this league? I don't know. And if you know that your quarterback can provide that, would they be kind of stagnant to Drake May's growth, right? If you have guys dropping passes all the time and then you get into a 3rd and 7 and the windows are kind of tight, you're probably thinking like either these guys aren't going to catch it or they get a hand on it, pop it, put it in the air. I might as well do the job myself. This is why I wonder, and tell me what you think, that maybe the big-time receiver is now much more important than getting the star offensive lineman or left tackle right now.
KJ, you know I love talking about offensive line, right? Like this, you know it, right?
It's like sex and cookies for you. It is almost that
basically,
way. Yeah.
Basically, right? Yeah. And playing EA college football too. But
there you go.
So like, here's my thing, and I think this has been, this is a thing that's true of the receivers and the O-line for the Patriots. The reason it's fluctuating is because throughout different points of the season, one group has made more glaring mistakes than the other, right? So, like, right now, the Patriots receivers have been, I mean, Kayshon Boutte had those two big catches late, but for the most part, over the last 2 weeks, they've been bad. Dropping passes, missing blocks, some routes that look a little bit off, they've been really bad. Whereas the O-line, it's been a little, it's still not, it's still a bad offensive line, but it's been
right.
a little bit better.
Not ideal, right.
I think the key is it's been quieter, right? Like,
yes.
there haven't been guys under siege. Whereas early in the season, the receivers were quieter. You know, they weren't glaringly having glaring mess-ups. And the O-line was awful. Like, one of the, I don't want to say worst ever, but it felt like one of the worst ever. So now, I think that's the thing. I wouldn't be surprised, KJ. Today's October 29th. Happy birthday to my dad and younger brother, by the way. But today's October 29th. I wouldn't be surprised if we sit here on November 28th, Thanksgiving Day, when you and I have a show and say, oh, wow, hey, the O-line's a big problem now and the receivers have quieted down. I just think it's the nature of the two groups and that they're going to fluctuate back and forth.
See, but that's the other part. I think the offensive line, because here's the thing. Remember when Jacoby comes in that first series and the first thing you notice was he's holding on to the ball too long.
That's part of it.
Right. So as you, if when you see more of that, then that tells me it's less of the offensive line, right? Because you remember at one point it was all, like you were saying, all offensive line, nobody could do anything. Then you started to see like, okay, Brissett is holding this ball a little too much. And maybe it's because of the shock of the O-line of what he's going through. But now because Drake May has been able to buy time, has been able to roll out, add maybe a second or two to the play, potentially could take off. It's allowed those offensive linemen to be able to hold those blocks or to be able to shift those defensive players coming in at the quarterback, where because the pocket is movement, I talked about that. I said once Drake May gets in there, he'll have the ability to move the pocket. And once he's able to do that, it'll allow the offensive line to not look as bad. And I think you're seeing little glimpses of that. Now, this is why I say May's got to be in there against Tennessee. One, it'd feel really good to have a chance to win two games in a row. But two, at least knowing that you'll be able to move the pocket, you won't run into situations where Brissett may be a deer in headlights and holds the ball too long while the offensive line has been able to kind of do their job.
Yeah, and that's been, I remember, I was at Jacoby Brissett's first training camp for a different media outlet, but I just remember being there saying, wow, he holds on to the ball for a while. And it's something that maybe he's gotten a little bit better in 8 years, but it's still a big problem.
Wait,
right? And look, here's the thing, too. Like,
you're still sitting here taking the SAT at 6 p.m.
Yeah,
you got to
go
home, right?
Exactly. Yeah, school's closed, right? Like, the Patriots offensive, it's still ranked 32nd by PFF, right? They allowed 11 pressures and 2 sacks last week on 39 snaps. Now, the week before against Jacksonville, it was 16 pressures on 47 snaps. So it's a little bit better, but we're still talking double-digit pressures, 27 combined in 2 weeks. Like, it's not good, and your tackles still aren't. I mean, Onwenu's been kind of a disappointment, too. And I love Mike Onwenu. He just hasn't played as well as years past. But your O-line,
maybe they should start doing down payments, deposits on salaries, right? Like,
I know,
we'll give you the other half once the season is over.
Yeah, once you stop fumbling Stevenson, we'll give you the other half. But that's the thing, because I think we need to remember, and I know you kind of alluded to this, being better than you were does not equate to being good, right? Like,
right.
They still have a lot. Like, I still don't know who their left tackle is next year. I'm still not sure who their left guard's going to be, who their right guard's going to be, or their right tackle, depending on where they put on Wenu. I mean, those are massive, massive question marks. But I think what we've seen here in the last 2, 3, 4 weeks is this receiver group. Yeah, maybe you can like Jalen Polk's potential, and I like Kendrick Bourne as a player, but there's nobody in there that scares a defense, which we kind of knew.
They're all threes.
Yeah, but we also saw, well, maybe, like, I still believe offensive tackle's the bigger need, but I think receiver is a maybe even bigger need than I thought it would be when the season started.
Shane, thank you so much for calling KJ and Lions. Good to hear from you talking Patriots. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good evening, guys. I was just curious what you think of DeMario Douglas's involvement, and it seemed like beginning of the year he wasn't involved, then he kind of got involved. They forced fed him the ball, and, you know, this past weekend, you know, he was kind of non-existent. You know, I think he has a good pair of hands, and, you know, I just think he should probably be more involved. So curious what you think about that. And, I'm not sure if Drake May is going to be able to return this week. If you look at the stats for for guys who have gone into the concussion protocol, no one has come back or cleared it within the week so far. So, you know, that'll be interesting. But, you know, great show. Talk to you soon.
Shane, thanks for the call. Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, Douglas was kind of like the everything last year, right? He was the bright spot. He was the diamond inside of a dark cave. And then Booty, you remember last year, was dealing with all the daily fantasy and the gambling stuff that had gone on.
Couldn't keep his feet in bounds against Philly.
That's one play, right? Because Polk had that play this year, right?
He did it twice against Philly.
Well, but the thing was that Booty wasn't in the mix of things last year.
Right.
Wasn't in a doghouse, but wasn't being able to have his meal inside as the family ate at the table. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah, and I find like the Douglas thing interesting because you look at that touchdown drive that they had. The first play of that drive, they ran what I thought was a nice schemed up pass to DeMario Douglas for 9 yards, and then the rest of the game he has one catch for 3 yards after that. Like this, to me, I think DeMario Douglas is probably he's definitely your quickest wide receiver. He may be your most pure talent receiver, maybe him and Polk.
Right.
And Boot, this guy should have the ball more. Now, what they did the first time they played the Jets when they forced it to him to the detriment of the rest of their offense, I don't want that. But I look at DeMario Douglas as a guy that in a really good offense, eventually, hopefully they get to that, but in a really good offense, he's like your third or fourth receiver, that slot guy who on third and six gets you 7 yards. And it feels like, look, they don't have a good offense, so this is part of it. But it feels like those opportunities aren't happening. Like, they don't target him a lot on third down. They don't find little whip routes or ways to get him open underneath.
You're reading my mind.
Like, it's just, it's those things. And I know, like, you can talk about the classic Troy Brown, Wes Welker, Julian Edelman role, and it's that role. But obviously those offenses were good. This one isn't. But still, even that role, like he can fit that role. And he did last year. I think last year, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he had the third most receptions for a Patriots rookie ever. Like he can clearly fit that role. And it's just like they haven't really figured out a way to get him there.
Here's what I'm thinking. Why do you not have him running route trees off of the two tight ends? Right? So if you know that the two tight ends are going to be there, why are you not running some type of action off of that, so that way there's a two option, right?
Sure.
The defense is probably going to look for Hunter Henry or for Hooper to get the ball, but if DeMario Douglas is running a quick route right off of that tree, whether it be a zig or or just kind of an immediate hook where he can get the ball in his hands and then utilize that speed, because if you're the defense, you're thinking, okay, quarterback wants to go to the tight end, let's follow the tight ends. But if there's that little space that you create right away, get Douglas the ball quickly and then trying to use his yards after catch, because like you're saying, he's probably the fastest guy on the team, so get him the ball quick instead of trying to wait for the play to develop, eyes going different ways, coverages, doubling down, sitting over the top of him and stuff like that, making it a little bit more difficult to get to him. Get him the ball quick and then let him see what he can do. 617-779-7937, text line 37937. KJ Lyons continues next. We got your calls, your text, and Just a Jag next. Thanks for hanging out on a Tuesday.
This is KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
Of course, candy makes you dandy. The best candy of all. Mary Jane, for sure. KJ Lyons, WEEI. Thanks so much for hanging out. We're minutes away from Just a Jag. Plus, we got to get into the Peyton Pritchard prom last night. That was like the junior and senior prom all in one game. That's coming up in about 10 minutes. Let's go to Kevin in the truck. We've been talking Patriots. Kevin, thanks for calling KJ Lyons. You're on the air.
Well, it was a pleasure to talk to you guys. First time talking to you. I want to address the Patriots wide receiver room. They're horrible. DeMario Douglas, you're raving about, could be this, could be that, and then you immediately rated him as a 3 or a 4 on a good offense.
Yeah, I think he's a 3.
Throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Well, no, but I think a 3, like a guy like that is valuable in a really good offense. The problem for them is they have the opposite of that right now.
Right. Saying he's a 3 means there'd be two other guys that would be better or more skilled than he.
Yeah, and Deshaun Booty, I mean, I liked when he came out of LSU. I liked some of the things they were talking about, how he did all this down there, and he had decent hands, but he can't get on the field. Tyquan Thornton gets in the doghouse, and he's never there. So you're looking at a bunch of pieces that just don't fit.
Thanks for the call,
Kevin. You don't even use them right.
Yeah, I think what you have to find out, John, is, yeah, probably more babies will go out with the bathwater over time, but which one will be able to be kept? It's not like you just go get three-star free agents and say, work with this.
Well, you know, because this is the worst Patriots receiver core, I think, since 2006. And what they did after that is they went out and got three new receivers that were really good. So maybe KJ.
Yeah, but what was else? What else was
there? Yeah, there was a little different there back then.
Okay, exactly.
Yeah, no, but I think, if just to use that as a little bit of context, that was, I think, the worst receiver group they've had in the last 20 years until this year, and they did make a concerted effort to overhaul it, and I think we'll see something similar, maybe not as drastic as that, but something similar maybe this offseason.
Yeah, let's go to Joe and Randolph. Thanks for calling KJ and Lyons. You're on the air.
Yeah, howdy, boys. Thanks for taking the call. I was just thinking, since we don't have such really good, reliable pass receivers, why don't we steal a page from the old Miami Dolphins and go to a ground game? You remember Larry Zonka and Kick and how they used to blast and get that ground game going? And they usually had most of the clock. They could control the ball, and they really set the tone for how the game was going to be played out. And, of course, if you have a strong ground game, that's going to open up a couple of the pass receivers.
Joe, thanks for the call. Damn, I just felt like I put leaded gas in my car.
You don't even have to go back that far. Just look at how they use James Devlin.
You want leaded or unleaded?
Like, it is interesting because they used Sidy Sow as a fullback on that final Ramondre Stevenson run, the touchdown run on Sunday. They used Sidy Sow as a fullback. It was Sidy Sow's only snap of the game. I mean, so I think there would be value to having a fullback, especially in an offense that has a lot of struggles overall, even with the excitement of Drake May, right? Like, they still only scored 16 points last week. They scored 25 this week, which was an improvement, but it's not like they're dropping 30 every week, right? So the fullback is something I think would be maybe worth revisiting, and it's something that we've seen have a lot of success here over the years, but a handful of other places as well.
Yeah, but you're running a lot of shotgun, right? So you're going to have shotgun and a fullback.
No, you wouldn't. You'd have to run more under center.
That's what I'm saying. But so I think once you put him under center, I think Ramondre Stevenson will be enough because at least he's got momentum coming and the play action could be there, right? So you have to that gets into receivers and the tight ends and stuff like that. But I think once Drake May is comfortable under center with his three-step, five-step, seven-step drops, then I think the run game will be able to benefit more. Maybe occasionally you run out of a straight-up I formation with a fullback, but you would feel like that's going to be on short yardage, right?
Yeah, maybe, but I think it's still something valuable, again, in the context of this offense that struggles. And even running the ball, they've been wildly inconsistent this year. They've had weeks where they've been dominant running the ball, and they've had other weeks like last week where, I mean, Drake May has 18 yards and he's your leading rusher, right? So I think it'd be something worth them revisiting, maybe bringing in a fullback to use in certain situations. But again, you're not going to have him on the field all the time. You're not going to build your offense around it. But considering your receivers have had so much struggles, your offensive line has had so many struggles, and you use someone at that position on the final offensive snap of the game the other day, maybe it is something worth checking out.
All right, still to come, more of your text at 37937 as well as your calls. We'll get to those. Celtics talk in about 10 minutes, but right now it's time for... Yeah!
I'm sorry that I said you were a Jag. Just a guy.
Oh, he's just a Jag. Not great, not bad. Doesn't stand out on the field.
Can he even get out there?
Oh, he's just a Jag. Not great, not bad. Uh-huh. Just a guy out on the field.
All right, John, let's look through week 8. I'll give you some names, head coaches, quarterbacks, and even a kicker is in here. You tell me if they're just a Jagger, then you're seeing something different. Let's start in Cleveland, where no weapon shall formed against me shall prosper. Jameis Winston calls on the name of the Lord and then throws for, what, 333 yards and three touchdowns?
And didn't I see him? He had a quote that, how can the sky be the limit if we've gone to the moon or something? Like, yeah. I'm in on this. You know, listen, I know he's had his ups and downs in his career. For 1 week, at least, he's above a Jag.
Yes, Jameis Winston, yeah. Tua Tagovailoa
Yeah, I hate, this is more a health thing. He's a Jag. I can't depend on him to be out there. Honestly, not to be morbid, I'm kind of just worried about his safety more than anything else.
Just a guy.
Yeah, I'm kind of, like, this may sound crazy. I'm like, please do not have Miami on a national game. It just seems to correlate between.
I get what you mean.
You know what I mean? Like, if it could be tucked in at one of these other random 103 starts. But yeah, I think he's in there for selfish reasons. And I also wonder if the money that he got is forcing this decision, at least inside of him, to make this happen. All right, Aaron Rodgers, Hall of Fame bound.
Below a Jag right now, though. He's been bad. I mean, really, watching that game Sunday, I mean, no mobility. You felt like inconsistent throwing the ball. I mean, you have Davante Adams and Garrett Wilson. You should do better than 22 points, and it was kind of a struggle for them to get those 22.
Two A's in Aaron.
Just a guy.
So give me that Jag. Two Jags and two Jags and Rodgers. Look, this guy, I really believe, and we'll get to it probably on the Friday show, that the Jets probably have a scheme in mind to start to potentially tank. Watch Thursday night's game. It'll be very interesting to see how that all plays out. All right, Russell Wilson, Pittsburgh Steelers.
So that's actually a really tough one. I'm going to go slightly above a Jag for these last couple weeks. It's only been a couple weeks, but he's looked pretty good. I mean, they had that big win against the Jets a couple weeks ago, so I guess I'll go just barely.
I know a couple weeks ago he was all Jag for you, so now you're coming along as well.
Yeah, okay. Just trying to be fair.
All right, there you go. Another one, Joe Flacco, Colts. Benching Anthony Richardson, going with Joe Flacco. We've seen this movie. What are you thinking of Joe Flacco?
Yeah, I'm thinking above a Jag, man. This guy, he went to the playoffs last year with the Browns. I think he's, look, Anthony Richardson completes less than 50% of his passes. Joe Flacco could do better than that. He's above a Jag for me.
You know, I'm going to start calling Joe Flacco Mr. Steal Your Girl, because when Joe Flacco comes to your team, oh, if you ain't doing the quarterbacking position right, Joe Flacco that ass, because that's literally now he's the gun for hire, and Indy might make a run with that talent on the team, plus Taylor is back and has been healthy. John Harbaugh, head coach of the Ravens.
So they are a great team. I think he is kind of an overrated coach. So I'm going to go Jag here. And it might sound weird, but they're consistently one of the highest penalized teams in the league. Sometimes they're slow to adjust. Their players make repeat mistakes. Look at Zay Flowers and his mistakes in the AFC Championship game, and then he comes back in week one in KC and runs the wrong route. Then right after, the tight end there likely doesn't get his feet in bounds. Like, I don't know. Like, he doesn't suck for sure. He's a solid coach, but I don't think he's as great a coach as maybe other people think.
Just a guy.
Yeah, I'm with you, because you remember the year that Lamar Jackson was about to go into his contract situation, it became kind of ugly? There, it seemed like there were a couple of games that John Harbaugh was making decisions that were going to put Lamar Jackson in can't-win situations towards the end of the game. I'm like, what is this guy doing? But sometimes when a guy used to be, if a guy's never really been in charge of an offense or defense, he's got that gambler's mentality, and John Harbaugh's been able to get with. I'm with you. I think the dude's a Jag.
Just a guy.
Dak Prescott and all that money.
It's a lot of money. I'm going to go above a Jag. He is ninth in the NFL in pass yards right now. 10 touchdowns to 8 picks, though, is kind of meh. But I'm going to go slightly above a Jag. I think that Cowboys situation, I've been saying this all year, I think that's more about coaching than it is about the roster.
What do we got? Steve Bartkowski here. Throw for a lot of yards, but we're not winning games. He's a Jag.
Just a guy.
Look, the NFC East is usually a two-team race, and now they're the third team. Easily, and I think they're only one game ahead of the Giants. What is going on there? It starts with the quarterback and the leadership. Brian Daboll in New York.
So I'm above a Jag here, and it's a lot to do with the work he did with Josh Allen, and he developed Josh Allen and I think helped even be developed to that level. I think Daboll's in a little bit of a tough spot with that.
He's just a Jag. How long do you need with Daniel Jones? And after all, you along with management decided that Saquon Barkley was not the guy to give $11 million, but Daniel Jones was the guy to give $40 million a year. Like, you said you could work with him. Have at it, Frankenstein.
Just a guy.
Kyler Murray, Arizona Cardinals, they lead the NFC West.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised they won the other day since the new Call of Duty came out last Friday, but I'm going to go with Jag here. I mean, what? This guy, look, he's got 11 touchdowns and 3 picks. I'll give him that, but I need to see it for a full season from him before I'm a believer. Way too often that guy fades down the stretch or makes key mistakes. So I got to see it for a full season before I'm a believer.
Just a guy.
You know what? He's in first, so anything below first, I can't call him a Jag. Chad Ryland, yes, the fourth-round kicker that Bill Love has won two games in a row for Arizona. Just a Jag?
Right now, he's above a Jag, man. He's won two games in a row. Going to tip my cap. And I'll tell you, it's what a weird career so far for him, man.
I don't remember being so windy. Maybe he was getting indoors. That's why he suddenly looks like a high pick of a kicker. But my goodness, it's just weird seeing like Chad Ryland is winning games. Usually he's losing second quarters. That's what's going on here. Sean McVay, head coach of the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, he's above a Jag. Not only did they win the Super Bowl a few years ago, but I think over the last couple of years, their roster has not been as good because some of those vets that they went all in to get the Super Bowl with have gone. Remember, Aaron Donald just retired. They're still competitive. They had a big win in Minnesota on Thursday night. I mean, hey, that Minnesota team is awesome. You know how much I like Brian Flores, and they had that defense off balance. I think he's actually one of the best coaches in the league.
Yeah, I'm going to say above a Jag as well because Sean McVay, which I thought was kind of like the boy toy of the year and all this, but he's looking pretty good when he's going through these difficult patches. You got Puka Nacua back. Cooper Kupp is back. Hopefully they can stay healthy. You still have Matthew Stafford who's able to pull things out of his behind. Watch out for the Rams in that NFC West where 4-4 is the top is the leading record. The Rams could make a run, and that is just a guy here on WEEI. There you go. Next, the Celtics. How long can they stay undefeated? Thanks for hanging out on WEEI.